listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Welcome, everybody. As you know, Unitarians have been in South Australia since 1854, and everybody is welcome here, no matter what the background, ethnicity, heritage, sexuality, gender, age, everyone is welcome here. And if visiting for the first time, then I'm sure you'll find us a friendly bunch. The main thing is there's tea and coffee at the end, late on. It's definitely worthwhile. And meanwhile, I can say we honestly do something different every week, and at least in terms of the themes, and I hope you find it interesting. We meet on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people, and we respect their elders, past and present. There are some things I'll bring to your attention today at 5 p.m. For those interested, there is a Vespers service at Shady Grove. That's our property up near Littlehampton. Bookings are open for the Catherine Helen Spence oration occurring on the 9th of November. And what I would like to do is pass around during the service these sheets, perhaps somebody could help me with that, asking for who would like to be a volunteer. We need a little bit of help setting up, so that would be from 5 o'clock onwards. The actual talking stuff is from about 6:15 until 7:30 approximately, and then there'll need to be a little bit of cleaning up until about 8 p.m. We're also asking for donations of wine, because we are going to be hosting some refreshments as well. So if you have 2 bottles or 1 or 10 at home that you can spare, feel free to pledge a donation, and we'll arrange to have them here and then taken off in one lot to the event at the time. So that would be very useful for the organising committee. Presently, David Cole, Noel Fraser and myself, it's all coming together very well. And we're fine-tuning. We haven't confirmed it, but it is very gratifying to know that Her Excellency the Governor is interested in introducing Justice Charlesworth. So this is really going to be a high profile and premier event. For your information, Mary is returning to the office on Wednesday, and Noel's been doing a great job holding the fort in the meantime. Shady Grove Bush Care and Cemetery Care is now on the 2nd and 4th Wednesday of the month. Contact Jenny Warner if you have any queries. We have this Wednesday meditation here at 5 p.m., 5 until 6. All are welcome to explore that. And unless there are any others, yes, from Brendan.
On the 22nd of October, I'm going up to play Mozart piano concerto after the church service. Got to get a show of hands of people who would like some catering after, of course you're coming along, that's great, if you can make it. Who would like maybe, a bite to eat and drink afterwards? Anyone keen on that? Yes? Good? Okay, good.
Yes, Unitarians like to eat together, so let's have some celebration with the music. Fantastic. And contributions, by the way, we rely on contributions. They can be made cash or tap and pay in the foyer afterwards. And now Brendan is back with some beautiful music from Frédéric Chopin. As is our tradition, we come before this candle lit on this chalice, and I make something of this fire that we light before us, of the ancient elements, those identified long ago, of earth, water, air and fire. A correspondence can be drawn with the psychological functions identified by Carl Jung of sensing, feeling, thinking and intuition. And I suggest to you, my friends, that no matter how smart or clever we are to make progress on the spiritual path, we need intuition. And now I'll ask Jenny to come forward, and she has a reading from T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland.
Madame Sosostris, famous clairvoyante, had a bad cold. Nevertheless, is known to be the wisest woman in Europe with a wicked pack of cards. "Here," said she, "is your card, the drowned Phoenician sailor. Those are pearls that were his eyes. Look, here is Lady Belladonna, the Lady of the Rocks, the Lady of Situations. And here is the man with three staves, and here's the wheel. And here's the one-eyed merchant, and this card, which is blank, is something he carries on his back, which I am forbidden to see. I do not find the hanged man. Fear death by water. I see crowds of people walking round in a ring. Thank you. If you see dear Mrs. Equitone, tell her I bring the horoscope myself. One must be so careful these days."
Yes, we suspect that T.S. Eliot was sending someone up, but beautifully read by Jenny. Now, we come to a hymn, and today a new hymn. And I can tell you, honestly, that I'm like a babe in the woods when it comes to hymns. You all know a lot more than I do. So I sometimes go searching for an appropriate hymn. And I came upon this hymn, To Truth, which really spoke to me and I thought you would enjoy. And it wasn't until I then researched it a little more. Who was this Savage, that was the name, who wrote this beautiful hymn? And it turned out to be Reverend Minnow Savage, a Unitarian minister. It was a moment of joy when I thought, I didn't know that when I selected this hymn, but he was indeed quite a prominent Unitarian in Chicago in the 19th century. So we invite Brendan to play for us. There are four verses, they'll be up on the screen. And perhaps, Brendan, you'll play the whole tune through first. Thank you. That was brilliant for a first run through. Hope you like it. Now, as is our custom, we have the opportunity to light a candle expressing a joy or concern that we may have. Let's just take a moment to reflect on what we've heard. The fact is that these bodies we're in decay, get injured, get sick, and eventually pass away. But there's something invaluable that we can enjoy while we inhabit these bodies, and that is the beautiful connections between family and friends, those precious connections. So let's be grateful for our friendships, the time we have with family, and the time we have with each other. Now I'll ask Richard to come forward with a reading for today by the Russian esoteric philosopher Pyotr Uspensky.
No study of occult philosophy is possible without an acquaintance with symbolism. For if the words occultism and symbolism are correctly used, they mean almost one and the same thing. Symbolism cannot be learned as one learns to build bridges or speak a foreign language, and for the interpretation of symbols, a special cast of mind is necessary. In addition to knowledge, special faculties, the power of creative thought and a developed imagination are required. One who understands the use of symbolism in the arts knows, in a general way, what is meant by occult symbolism. But even then, a special training of the mind is necessary in order to comprehend the language of the initiates and to express in this language the intuitions as they arise. There are many methods for developing the sense of symbols in those who are striving to understand the hidden forces of nature and man, and for teaching the fundamental principles as well as the elements of the esoteric language. The most synthetic and one of the most interesting of these methods is the tarot. In its exterior form, the tarot is a pack of cards.
So how many of you have sat down for a tarot card reading? A few. I'm not sure if it was of use. If someone said to you in the markets, cross my palm with silver, I'll tell your fortune, I hope the cards revealed that you're a gullible person who has too much silver. You don't know how to spend it wisely. But seriously. What possible value can a deck of tarot cards be to your spiritual progress? That's the question I come back to every week. What is it that will assist you on your spiritual journey? What is it that will help you and encourage you to be a kinder, wiser, more loving person? First, let me tell you a little about the history and structure of the tarot card deck. Historically, we can go back to the 1400s to find examples of playing cards in northern Italy. There's evidence that the concept came from Islamic Egypt. The so-called Mamluk decks had suits of cups, polo sticks, coins, and scimitars. The early European cards represented many of the significant features of human society and human experience. They portrayed the court characters of the king and queen and the lesser royalty. In my travels through Italy, I've witnessed frescoes and art from that early Renaissance period in which the playing of cards is depicted. Our modern playing cards are derived from these Italian cards of 600 years ago. The suits have somehow evolved. The original four suits were more relatable to our 15th century counterparts, the cup, the baton, or sticks, or wands, the coins, and the sword. The cups became hearts, the batons or sticks became clubs, the coins became diamonds. How did swords become spades? It's simple, the Italian word for swords is spada. so some monolingual English person wrote it down as spades. The 22 major cards with their grand themes were completely dropped. The court cards were reduced from 4 to 3 for each suit, leaving us with the 52 cards of the modern deck, ace through to 10 plus the picture cards. Today I reflect on the 22 major cards, those which have completely dropped out of sight in terms of our household playing cards. They remain of great significance in esoteric circles. They can provoke the imagination, self-reflection, and insight into the motivations and aspirations of our own psyche. It's difficult to know whether the Renaissance artists and promoters of the cards, tarocchi in Italian, contemplated the meaning of life as they drew these major cards. On the face of it, these major cards were initially trump cards in the card game, with the exception of the fool, which was a wild card. The 15th century game then was essentially a contest of taking tricks. In other words, playing a higher ranking card to capture other cards. The aim of the game was to end up with the biggest pile. Some things never change. There are documented stories going back to the 1500s of a parlour game called Tarocchi Appropriati. In other words, the appropriate card. A player would choose a card for their opponent, who would then be required to give a witty account of why the card was chosen for them. A card game with a psychological edge. There had always been variations on the basic design, but by the 1600s, a deck known as the Tarot of Marseille had become the standard, and the popularity of that deck has endured up until now. It's fair to say an occult revolution occurred in Western Europe in the 19th century, arguably beginning in pre-revolutionary France. As the scientific knowledge of the Enlightenment filtered through educated society, many people questioned the traditional Christian beliefs. A growing number of people realised that the account of creation in the book of Genesis was not literally true. And once one questioned the literal truth of Genesis, the question was logically raised, what else in the Bible isn't literally true? Scriptural scholarship cast doubt on the Trinity of three gods in one, which had been confirmed as Christian doctrine some 1400 years previously, not 1800, but 1400 years previously. Unitarianism flourished in England and the USA. Interest grew in esoteric groups and the philosophies of the exotic East, meaning India primarily. Spiritual yearnings remained despite the questioning of traditional Christian theology. And against this background, the old Italian playing cards were re-examined, pondered over for secret meanings. And the 22 trump cards began to be called arcana, or arcana, by esoteric writers, from the Latin for concealed or in secret. In turn, that word comes from arca, the Latin for box or chest. In other words, with the imagination, one could open up the mysteries inherent in the images of the cards. Some even sought to link the imagery of the cards with the magical rituals of ancient Egypt. Out of all this, the most enduring tarot deck of the English-speaking world was created in 1909, the Rider-Waite deck. Rider was the name of the man who published the deck. Arthur Waite was the esotericist who designed the symbolism, and Pamela Smith was the artist. Typical of the era, the funky-looking woman responsible for drawing the imagery was submerged in history. Waite's main innovation was to design imagery for all of the pip cards, the cards numbering 1 to 10 in each suit, which had previously simply shown the relevant number of objects, such as the regular set of playing cards does today. So before taking a closer look at the major arcana of the Rider-Waite deck, or rather the Smith-Waite deck, I must say something about fortune-telling. The inherent uncertainty which characterises the human condition prompts most of us with a yearning to know something of what the future holds, as if our fate was written in the stars. To misquote Shakespeare, the fault lies not in the stars, but in ourselves. It's commonly misquoted that way. The original quote is not quite so benign as that. As the ambitious Cassius says to Brutus, "The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in the stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings." In other words, Cassius is appealing to the ego of Brutus to provoke him into killing his way to the top. While one can't say with certainty that playing cards hadn't been used for divination in earlier times, the first documented fortune-telling use of the tarot cards is the late 1700s in France. The notion of forecasting future events isn't particularly interesting. In this aspect, one can understand T.S. Eliot's jumble of imagery, including his made-up tarot cards. He seems to be dismissing the whole thing as modern superstition. I'm sure many of you could relate to that. But in light of our understanding of the human psyche today, much more interesting is the opportunity to exercise the imagination to explore the archetypes depicted in the cards. As Carl Jung said in a seminar in 1933, quote, "They are psychological images, symbols with which one plays as the unconscious seems to play with its contents. They combine in certain ways, and the different combinations correspond to the playful development of events in the history of mankind. The original cards of the tarot consist of the ordinary cards, the king, the queen, the knight, the ace, etc., only the figures are somewhat different. And besides, there are 21 cards upon which are symbols or pictures of symbolical situations. For example, the symbol of the sun, or the symbol of the man hung up by the feet, or the tower struck by lightning, the wheel of fortune, and so on. Those are sort of archetypal ideas of a differentiated nature, which mingle with the ordinary constituents of the flow of the unconscious. And therefore it is applicable for an intuitive method that has the purpose of understanding the flow of life, possibly even predicting future events, at all events lending itself to the reading of the conditions of the present moment." And now I'll invite Brendan to play us a further tune, appropriately, "The Fool on the Hill."
Thank you.
Thank you, Bryn. Especially appreciated the improvisation. That was beautiful. Thank you. So, with the comments of Jung and Ouspensky in mind, let's look at the major arcana. We begin with the fool, just as in life we begin with our naivety. The fool's about to step over the edge of a cliff, and maybe to stop this, there's a little companion, perhaps instinct, warning the fool of the impending fall. A fall into the world of experience, of thwarted desires, physical pain, of attachments found and lost. In some decks, the fool is shown at the end of the sequence of 21 major cards, implying that after all of our experiences, when we have a complete understanding of the world, we may once again live in innocence and become as little children, as Jesus, Yeshua, put it. Card number one, the magician, also called the juggler, balancing the impulses of the unconscious with the deliberate choices of the conscious mind. The energies of the four suits are available to be used: cups, batons, coins, swords. The four elements: earth, water, air, and fire. The four psychological functions described by Jung: sensation, feeling, thinking, intuition. Will the magician use these elements to create personal power or love for others? The High Priestess. Regardless of birth gender, how do you relate to feminine wisdom? The wisdom whose ways are gentle, quiet, and discreet. All of the holy virtues ascribed by Christians to the Virgin Mary are presented here as an inspiration, an idealized form of mother. She is a receptacle of knowledge, and she remembers. She contemplates and reveals. The Empress and the Emperor. The archetypal mother and father. We need to come to terms with them one way or another. The Empress is warm, comforting, and reassuring. The Emperor sets boundaries. We begin by being disciplined by others. We learn to discipline ourselves. There are consequences if we transgress. Again, our own gender is not relevant in this dimension. We all must resolve relationships with our mother and father, no matter how close or distant they may be. The Hierophant, or Holy Man. We all come across teachers or guides in our lives. As the old saying goes, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. How will you adapt and absorb the teachings on offer so that you one day will be the guide for others? The Lovers, obviously raising the question of relationships. On a more subtle level, raising the prospect of the union of masculine and feminine, and how we might come to terms with masculine and feminine qualities in our own psyche. The Chariot, representing the times in our lives when we need to take on a commanding role. How will we develop the level of mastery and confidence required? Strength. Physical strength is one thing. The greatest strength is to master one's passions so that we may pursue them as we consciously choose, rather than being driven along by the wild animal within us. The Hermit. There are times when we need to retreat, to be by ourselves. Finding solitude allows us to resolve the complex issues in our lives. The Wheel of Fortune. The experience of life is unpredictable. We will be confronted by circumstances we never expected. How do we get to a point of equanimity where we can remain calm and self-assured, whether we meet success or failure, praise or insults. Justice. Each is given what is due to them. With justice blind as to their personal qualities, we must understand and let go of our prejudices if we are to truly respect all we encounter. Learning a degree of detachment in our human relations. The Hanged Man. He knew this would happen to him on the path to enlightenment. It is a sacrifice. It is necessary. Death. Nothing to be afraid of here. Although this card is often used in superficial TV shows to give people a fright, we are more concerned here with death of the ego. Temperance. The image is an obvious case of water representing the emotions. The devil, the shadow self. For thousands of years, human beings have projected their most indulgent and dangerous urges onto a fantastic being. It is only by recognizing the urges in our own psyche that we can disarm them and be truly free from them. The Tower. Have you had that experience when something you truly believed in completely crumbles in an instant, the grand illusion being completely demolished? It is experienced as a calamity, but we rebuild. The Star. From calamity, we turn to hope. The Moon. Long associated with the emotions. In the image, a crustacean leaves its life in the emotional world to embark on a long journey into the hills. The Sun, the experience of joy, glory, and new life. Judgment. The imagery is a clear reference to the Judgment Day featured in Middle Eastern religions. Universal salvation, the ultimate resolution, to be forgiven and free from all past mistakes and hurts. The World. What does it mean to be fulfilled and whole when all is integrated within your psyche? What need is there to be this or that? You just are. I hope you'll agree that at the very least these weird and wonderful images of the tarot can raise lots of questions for our imagination to explore. For those who read tarot cards for others, as I have done in the past, there are various ways of laying down the cards in formation. The real art in exploring the imagery is seeing the significance of combinations between cards as they fall out together. I don't expect you all to rush out and buy a deck of tarot cards, as I did when I was an adolescent. But I hope you'll see that there's more to the tarot than parlour games and spooky fortune-telling. Let us constantly be ready to exercise our intuition, to notice and ponder the wonders in art and nature, which can help us understand ourselves and bring us to fulfillment. We hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitariansa.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians. or by visiting our website at unitariansa.org.au.
We are blessed with beautiful music in this place. Thank you.